Welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. And as this is the beginning of August, August 1st it is the time you're hearing us, the time it's available, I don't know when you're hearing us. We are starting a new theme. I discussed it last week. Kind of excited because I had a lot of requests from some people for this one, and it is going to be music. I have decided for this first venture into music, I'm going to do my five favorite bands that kind of got me into different things. I'll explain more as we go through. You'll understand what I mean by it. This week's episode is going to be about one of my all-time favorite bands, which is the Aquabats. For the folks out there who don't know who the Aquabats are, or barely familiar with them, they are a started off as a ska band and then later turned into just a rock band. They are the reason they call themselves the Aquabats is not just because it's a fun little name, but they kind of came up with this theme of being these superheroes known as the Aquabats, and they each have a pseudonym or a secret identity they go by. The original group started off with three gentlemen. There was Christian, Chad, and Boyd, met in Brea, California, formed a kind of a joke band that kind of made fun of the scene that they were in, which if you listen to the first album, The Return of the Aquabats, you'll kind of get it with what was going on with it. There's a lot of jokiness going on, a lot of talk about certain people that would be in the scene area in there, which is pretty cool. But the biggest thing to me is just fun. You can't listen to them and be in a bad mood because it'll burn through your bad mood pretty quickly, which is of course, you know, amazing. The big thing for me when I first listened to them is it was my first venture into like ska. And then of course I saw them and how ridiculous they looked, and I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna be in for this for sure, because it's ridiculous, and they talk about pop culture and they're very influenced by 80s and wee early 90s pop culture, like I was with cartoons and movies and TV shows and video games and stuff like that. So that helped a lot with me getting into it. But also, it broke open the world of ska for me back in the day, because I was never really exposed to too much of it outside of a few sprinkling throughs of my punk rock early days were in there too. But they were like the catalyst for a lot of it, because they were very it was very heavy into that. It was pretty amazing. So they've had five studio albums, a couple EPs, and one collection, which I'll burn through pretty quickly. So up first we have The Return of the Aquabats, which is a hilarious name because, well, you know, it's their first real album that they released. Anyways, so back then they were a very large outfit. The main group of them, when they released this album, there were 8, 9 of them? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of them. So you have the Cape Commander, who is the lead singer, who's actually Christian Jacobs. You have Chainsaw on guitar. You have the Brain on guitar. You have Crash McLarson on bass. You have Roddy B on drums. Nacho on keyboards. Catboy on trumpet. And Prince A on trumpet. And then when they played live on a couple different tracks, when they played live, it was basically the 8 of them. But on the additional tracks, they had a couple other musicians that played on different instruments on different songs. And of course, Ultra Kai, credited as the 9th man of the group, is in there as well. So the first album really consists of ridiculousness. You have songs like Play-Doh, Martian Girl, Idiot Box, and Marshmallow Man. Those ones are, like, if you ask me, some of the best ones on that the whole album, all 10 songs in the original album are fantastic, but those ones are kind of the ones that really get you into him. Sky Robot Army is really fun. Aquabats March is really fun. CD Repo Man is amazing because it's a play on Repo Man the movie, which is amazing. And then it's Crazy Man is kind of the wrap up for it on there as well. Fantastic. The biggest thing for me is I was able to go see them quite a bit living in San Diego at the time, and so I was able to really see them kind of right away. And I really, like, early on, like, as soon as the CD came out, they were, like, I saw them, like, 3 or 4 times that first year, which is pretty amazing. And then following up that, they had a lineup change a little bit. They added a new drummer, went by the name of the Baron Von Tito, also known as Travis Barker. He is the drummer for many bands, but the biggest one would be Blink-182 fame. He was their drummer for that album as well as touring. It was pretty amazing to see him kind of blossom. But really, the Fury of the Aquabats, the second album, was really where they kind of busted into mainstream, I would say. They got radio play, which was ridiculous to think about, but they did. The biggest thing I was start to hear the redone version of Martian Girl that was featured on Fury of the Aquabats, and I remember hearing on 91X, which is the alternative station that everyone in San Diego really grew up listening to, and it was like kind of like crazy. But then they had an actual real single, from Return of the Aquabats, you would hear like a Martian Girl on the radio, which is pretty cool. And then, like I was saying, when you hear their first single off of Fury of the Aquabats, which is super rad, and it's being played on regular radio, you're like, oh, this is kind of crazy. And it was amazing. And I loved hearing them on the radio, because they are such a small band, and it was just a weird thing to hear them kind of be on there. But this album is really where they kind of, like I said, busted in the mainstream, but also they kind of formulated their idea of what the band would be with the Fury of the Aquabats. Much of it was on the first album, you know, it was a fun time and they didn't have much. This one, they started to build like lore and things into the songs they did, and like they started doing like little, I don't want to say stories, but kind of created characters that they had in there. You had everything from Magic Chicken, you had Powder Milkman, you had Martian Girl. One of my favorite songs in the album is Captain Hanton and the Midget Pirates. It is a fantastic song, it's super fun. But it does, overall, Super Rad was one of my favorite songs of all time, but the number one song off this album, oddly enough, is the Lobster Bucket, which is track 14. And the reason is because it's a ridiculous song, but also like teaches a common moral aspect, or moral thoughts in it and stuff, is pretty cool. And then you had a hidden track of Play-Doh, which is a redone one from Return of the Aquabats, which is the very first song. And they, of course, had the re-recorded version of Martian Girl on there. And then around this time, when I was in high school, a friend of mine, Ian, and a bunch of his friends, unknown to me, I didn't know they were into the Aquabats, they actually did, during the talent show, they did a sketch of Martian Girl, where it was pretty amazing. And Pam, his girlfriend at the time, was the Martian Girl. They painted her green and everything, and Ian was the lead. And they didn't dress like the Aquabats, but they did act out what would be like essentially the story of the song. It was pretty awesome. And I was already friends with Ian, but I was like, hey, Ian, hey, man, I didn't realize this, but you like the Aquabats. And he's like, yeah, man. And I was like, oh, we're going to be really good friends now. And then we went over our histories, and we actually ended up being out of some of the same shows without knowing it, and oddly enough, at the time, I didn't even know him, because it was early in high school, and I didn't really know him that well. So I might have seen him there, but I didn't know if I was or not. So it was pretty cool. But yeah, so they had the couple of the re-recorded songs from Return Of on here. You had Martian Girl, like I said, Play-Doh, and you also had Idiot Box, which are just re-recorded ones. They sound a little better with a little more money behind them, a little more studio work in there, and then mastering their craft more too. But it actually plays into kind of the bigger story and stuff they're trying to tell with their characters and stuff like that, which is pretty cool. Then you had in 1999, you had their kind of a departure from the ska realm, went more to the punk rock style. They had some horns in it still, but not a lot, as much as they had in other ones. They had a lot more synthesizers in this particular album. But this one really played up the superhero stuff, and they kind of formulated a more of a story-based thing and a theme through it. And one of my favorite things about going to their concerts, once they started getting a little bigger, they would actually have costumed bad guys come out that would get in play fights with them on stage, which is pretty amazing. Not so much at Kane's, when I saw them a couple times, because that place is literally the size of a shoebox. That's actually being generous. But a couple of times, I remember going to the New Year's Eve show, and they had a lot of crazy characters come out onto the stage and play with them, play around with them on the stage, is pretty cool. So Aquabats versus the Floating Eye of Death was their third full length album release, like I said, this really, really went hard on the story driven everything on there, which is pretty amazing. Bunch of fantastic songs on this album too. Really solid album. Some of my faves would be Lovers of Loving Love, Chemical Bomb, one of my favorites, which is a ridiculous song, Giant Robot, Birdhead, and I'd probably say Tiny Pants is one of my other favorite ones on there too, which is amazing album as well. And then you have their compilation album, which is a bunch of studio outtakes and B-sides that they kind of put together that were just ridiculous in their own right. I would say on this one, the compilation album is called Myths, Legends, and Other Amazing Adventures Volume 2, which when I was younger, drove me insane because I was like, I can't find the first one because it didn't exist. It was really funny. This was, like I said, this is studio outtakes, B-sides, and unreleased tracks from the production of The Aquabats versus the Floating Eye of Death. And so a lot of it was, it's just a mishmash of different ones. I Fell Asleep in My Arm is a really fun one because it's like almost like a parody of Korn, which is hilarious. But it's about a guy who fell asleep on his arm and now it's asleep and he's trying to do stuff with it. It's pretty pretty ridiculous. Still a lot of a very large band in its own right. Then after that, we had Yo, Check Out This Ride, which was their EP that came out in 2004. 5 quick years after that, which was more of a further transformation into the less ska-y. They still had a bunch of ska, still a bunch of brass or instruments in there. Like you had the saxophone and you had the trumpet, but you got a lot more synthesizer and keyboards in there, which really played up on that. But they did 2 original songs and then 3 cover songs in this one. You have a Kinks cover. You have the Plimsolls, and then my favorites is Throw Away the Trash, which is actually a song by a group called the Kids of Whitney High. And if you don't know what the Kids of Whitney High are, it is a group, it is a school for mentally challenged and physically challenged kids, and they encourage them to do things like create a band. And so they did a song, they've done a bunch of different songs, have like a handful of albums out. And they did a song called Throw Away the Trash. A lot of their songs that they write on the Kids of Whitney High albums are usually like lessons to be learned or things you do in your normal life, like throw away the trash. So they do a cover of that, which is pretty cool. It was a pretty fun little album. The cover songs were the best part. The other two songs were all right, but it was pretty fun still. And you had their fourth studio album, third studio album, fourth of if you count the Myths, Legends, and Other Amazing Adventures. But you had Charge, which was their technically fourth studio album, if you want to really break it down, but really their third full release, where it was all written together. And this is where they really tightened up the band, got rid of all wind instruments, so no brass, no horns, nothing like that on there. And it was just the five main guys with keyboards and regular old instruments, bass, guitar, drums, and things like that. So kind of, again, tightened it up, made it a little more of a rock outfit, alternative punk kind of thing. This one's really fun too. A couple of my favorite songs would be their single off this album, which is Fashion Zombies. I really like that one a lot. I'm a really big fan of Nerd Alert, which is a hilarious title as well as a fun one to say. Meltdown, I think, is one of their favorite ones on here, and I would say Stuck in a Movie is probably my other favorite one off that album. Really fun on there too. And they released a 1 year anniversary edition that added three more songs to it, which were pretty good songs, but they were B-sides off of the album from recording it that they got released, but also came with a DVD that had a documentary about them making this album. And then you have a commentary from the Aquabats about each track. You had a music video for Fashion Zombies. You had a couple behind the scenes footage of them making the music video as well as the album and creating the cover art for it. And then you had a teaser of the album being produced in there, because it was very burgeoning of internet usage on there, because this album was early days of 2005. I know it doesn't sound like that early, 13 years ago, but a lot of things have happened over the internet, and how things are put on the internet when it comes to it. So it was pretty fun. And then it had a photo gallery on there as well, if I remember correctly, of just them and all sorts of crazy stuff. Really fun album as well. Then you had their second EP, which was more of a single than anything else. It was a three-track one. Singles were kind of a dead art form in 2010 when this came out, 8 years ago. So there was a three-songer. The best one on here was Radio Down featuring Biz Markie. As you can imagine, amazing song because it has Biz Markie on it, and Biz Markie is amazing. But they had a very tight group in here, just vocals, bass, guitar, keyboards, and drums on that one too. Really good, like tight little songs on there, but like Radio Down featuring Biz Markie is my favorite on that one. And then their last studio album that they released was in 2011, and this one's called Hi-Fi Soup. Hi-Five Soup, I said that wrong. This one was really very similar to some of the other ones. They did feature the version or the Biz Markie song again, Radio Down, which still is one of my favorites on there. But their big song on that one was Shark Fight, or Shark Fighter, which is a fun little song I believe had a music video as well. I believe I could be wrong about that. Maybe it was a fever dream I had of wishing it was a thing. I could have swore though. That's what it was. The music video was never filmed. The narrative, The Shark Fighter, was adapted into an episode of the Aquabats live action show, The Aquabats Super Show. That's what it was. I knew there was something about it, because I knew he was featured in something. It was an episode of their TV show that I will talk about in a little bit here, the Aquabats Super Show. I do remember that one because it's pretty fun as well. And so on this one, again, it had Radio Down on it. It had the Shark Fighter. It had Hey Homies. I think that's all my favorite ones on there. Pink Pants was good too. This one was essentially a leap towards what they were working on, which was the Aquabat Super Show, which when I was, they were always kind of teasing things and it finally came about, which is amazing because like they had a TV show, which is crazy thing about, because like if you know about these dudes, it's just amazing that they got a TV show and actually ran for 3 seasons on a channel called The Hub, which is a failing network anyways, then relaunched as I know it's here somewhere, Discovery Family. I had the page here so I could read it. They basically opted not to renew the Aquabat Super Show for another season after that, and then effectively canceling the whole thing, and going on to say they're going to do it in other ways, online streaming services, blah blah blah. And to speak of that, you actually have a little bit of news on that. Is the present day today as of recording, which is July 31st, and it started today for the whole month of August. If you're listening to this and you want to, and you're a fan or you become a fan or whatever, they're actually doing a Kickstarter for a bunch of new stuff. The first goal is to get produce a new album as well as some new episodes of the TV show, and stream it online, or you know, hopefully get picked up somewhere if it works out that way. But yeah, you can actually, if you go to the Aquabats website, so aquabats.com, you can actually watch the video that they made, which is pretty cool because it has a bunch of famous people in it as well, kind of joining along with them. Everybody from it stars Jack Black. It has the return of Travis Barker back in the Aquabat outfit. It has Weird Al Yankovic. It has Felicia Day. A bunch of people that are amazing. They're like Imagine Dragons is in it. A lot of people are supporting them. And you can head over to Kickstarter. If you go to aquabats.com, you can, it's right on the front page is the Kickstarter, and you can go to the Kickstarter page and watch the video, which is pretty fun, and learn all about what they want to do. And if you want to support them, you can. And I have already supported them on there, and I probably will do more if I can, because I love the Aquabats and I want more music, but also the TV show is pretty fun as well. But the show itself, so I forgot to mention this earlier. So late in the careers of Christian, who's AKA the Bat Commander or Caped Commander, him and a buddy of his, they decided, and I could get this whole story wrong, and I could probably read it off the website, but I'm not going to. You had Christian and you had Scott, who were family people that have kids, and they one day decided that there wasn't enough kids programming for their kids at the time. Like when they were growing up, they had things like Sesame Street, Electric Company, Pee Wee's Playhouse, Sid and Marty Croft. You had Banana Splits, HR Puffin Stuff. A lot of these really fun TV shows that were centered on teaching kids not just, you know, alphabet and numbers and counting and all that stuff like Sesame Street did, but they also did, you know, stuff for like ethics and morals and right from wrong, which all of those essentially were very much like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, but more of there was puppetry involved in majority of all of those. And so they wanted to create something similar to that for their kids to kind of grow up watching. So they put it on themselves to make a TV show called Yo Gabba Gabba for the people who have kids out there, just in tune with pop culture, is it was a TV show that was hosted by a character named DJ Lance Rock, and then had a bunch of creature characters that were costumed characters that were on the show. There was Muno. There was I'm gonna have to read the list off. Fufa, Broby, 2D, and Plex. I think there's some other ones in there too, but it was a mix between live action and animated cartoons that played through, and they had a lot of musical guests, insanely popular music guests that were on there that ranged the gamut from rock, rap, punk rock, alternative, electronic. They had famous people on there that weren't in bands, routinely in bands. But you had everything from the Flaming Lips. You had Lil Wayne. You had one of my favorites, Mariachi El Bronx. You had Weird Al Yankovic. Jack Black appeared. Tony Hawk appeared. Elijah Wood appeared. You had the Aquabats, obviously, showed up. Devo, which is one of the biggest like influences for the Aquabats, they were on the show. Anne Heche was on the show. You had one of my other favorite bands, Chromeo, was on there. My Chemical Romance on there. Weezer was on there. The Faint, which is another one of my favorite bands, was on there as well. You had The Roots. You had The Shins. I mean, huge amounts of bands that appeared on the show. And they played songs, and it was a way of kind of bringing their childhood shows to life in their own way with a lot of their friends and collaborators throughout the years. And one of the cool things about it was it was all spurred from the imagination of Christian and Scott, of course, but Christian, because he did a lot of the planning and visuals for the band, for the Aquabats, including one of my favorite memorabilia pieces I have. I don't even know how to call it memorabilia, that I got ever at a show. And so when I was very young, it's about the second or third time I saw the Aquabats. This was at Kane's Bar and Grill in Mission Beach in California? I can't remember where Kane's is at. Pacific Beach? Pacific Beach. Doesn't matter. It's at Kane's Bar and Grill in San Diego, which I believe is still there. I don't live there anymore, so I don't really know, but I think it's still there. And so I got dropped off early before the show, and I wasn't old enough to go to the open bar, the bar-restaurant part of it, so I had to go. They actually let me in early because of my I had a ticket already, and I got to sit inside the venue portion of it, which is at night is a bar, but during the day and during shows is just open for the show because the stage is in there and the sound system and everything. So I went in there and hung out so I could get out of the sun and the heat because there wasn't a really big line. And I was sitting there and drinking a water, and this dude said, "Hey man, what are you doing here?" I was like, "I'm here to see one of my favorite bands, the Aquabats." And he's like, "Oh, really?" I'm like, "Yeah, man." He's like, "Oh, that's cool." He's like, so we're sitting there talking. He's like, "What do you like about him?" And doing all this, you know, talking all this stuff. Like, "Oh, you know, they're this ska band." And I'm explaining the Aquabats to this guy, not realizing who it is. And then he goes, "Hey, man, that's pretty awesome. Here you go." And I didn't notice what he was doing, but he was actually drawing something on a napkin. And he hands it to me. And scribbled on this napkin is the words, "The official Aquabats napkin." And it has a picture of one of the classic monsters that is featured in some of their artwork, which is a Cyclops creature, which actually ends up looking a lot like Muno from Yo Gabba Gabba did. Ends up that was Christian, the lead singer, back commander of the Aquabats. But I didn't recognize him because I've never actually seen his real face without the get up on, without the goggles and the hat and things like that. So I didn't recognize who it was. So I just explained my favorite band, the Aquabats, to the lead singer and creator of the Aquabats, and he played along, and it was amazing. And I kind of wish I would have had the nerve to have him sign it after the fact, because he hands it to me and he walks away, and I didn't realize, like, I thought, "Oh, this guy's, like, that's cool, like, this dude's," and it dawned on me who he was, and I was like, I'm an idiot. I don't know who he is, which goes to show you how good their disguises are, because I could not tell who he was, but it was pretty awesome. So one day I'm going to try to have him sign that napkin, but it's that napkin for you kids doing the mouth out there is 22 years old. I got that in 1995 at the wee age of 14, and is one of my prized possessions. It's pretty amazing. But yeah, so that's basically it for the Aquabats for this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. And again, we were talking about one of my favorite bands, the Aquabats, and their influence on me and all their albums that they did, and that I love them so, so much. And hopefully you will check them out. I will have a link to the Kickstarter, which is only good for the month of August. So if you're listening to this past the month of August of 2018, it's going to do you no good. Because it's, well, it's over and done. Hopefully it's been successful, and they created more new stuff that's, pretty awesome. Yeah, that's it for this week's episode. Again, I am your host, Cody, and you've been listening to The Awesome with Cody, and as usual, let's be awesome.